The National Broadcasting Company, in pursuance of its efforts to keep its listeners abreast of developments both at home and abroad, has arranged to bring an on-the-spot report from its representative in Singapore, Harrison Foreman. We take you now to Singapore.
And Foreman? This is Harrison Foreman in Singapore. Halfway around the world, and just about halfway around the clock from New York. It's exactly 10 minutes past 7 in the morning.
Yes?
Friday morning. With the arrival yesterday of large numbers of troops from the United Kingdom, England contributes a substantial share of her own manpower to the polyglot of races and creeds which make up Great Britain's imperial forces, garrisoning Singapore and Malaya. The reinforcements include regular army, air force, and naval units. They came in quietly, disembarking at Keppel Harbor on one of the busiest sections of Singapore's waterfront. There was none of the noisy hoopla of the Australian volunteers when they arrived the other week. None of the showering of pennies and cigarettes on the dignified heads of high-placed brass hats. They listened quietly to the music of a welcoming regimental band playing on the dock as the big transport was brought into its berth. And when the music was over, they applauded, as orderly and as politely as if they were listening to a band concert on the village green. I sense more than the natural reservedness of the Englishman in all of this. So softly in contrast to the high-spirited, exuberant Aussie colonials. Perhaps it was because they had a front-seat view of war with all its grim realities.
Air blitzes,
food rationing, and the strain of a long, perilous journey halfway around the world. A good deal of it through submarine-infested waters have no doubt drained much of the glamour and adventure in this war business for them. As they marched down the long dock, passing American soldiers, discharging tons of just-arrived lend-lease material, the mines buzzed with comment and speculation. A temporary camp was quickly set up in a large vacant space near the football stadium. It had started to rain about the time they were just beginning to get set. But they didn't seem to mind much. They seemed eager to get things ship-shaped in a hurry, so that leaves might be granted for a look-see at the sights of the town. You might think we were in China, from the looks of things, said one young lad. I explained that nearly 85% of Singapore's population were Chinese. There is a popular cliché here that Malaya is ruled by the British, who run it for the Chinese. Singapore, as a matter of fact, with the exception of a downtown business center, looks little different from any big city in South China. The thing that impressed these men most were the lights of the city at night, an unexpected sight after blacked-out England and weeks at sea on a blacked-out ship. They were strongly convoyed for the entire journey from England. About half of the men were veterans of France, and most of these were in the historic evacuation from Dunkirk. I asked them what they thought about the prospects of war in Malaya. Generally, the belief seemed to be that trouble here was rather remote. The veterans were glad of this, for they looked upon this Malaya duty in the light of a breathing spell, while the rookies felt as if they'd been cheated out of something. The powers that be, entrusted with the defense of Singapore and Malaya, however, are taking no chances. They are ever vigilant against the danger of sudden attack and invasion. Invasion and capture of Malaya would mean more than territorial loss and a serious blow to Britain's imperial prestige. It would mean almost a stranglehold monopoly over the world's principal source of rubber and tin, which are the two most important essentials in the manufacture of armaments and mechanized transport. Vital products for America, geared up and committed to its role as an arsenal for democracy. But invasion of Malaya will not be so easy a problem as it may appear from the perusal of maps and shells. The thick jungle affords not only natural combat lines, but also excellent cover from which to beat off attacks from superior numbers of the enemy. On an observation tour during the week-long maneuvers just completed in a district 100 miles north of Singapore, I was particularly impressed with the way artillery and anti-tank guns were so easily and effectively screened to command and protect the approaches to the few roads snaking through the jungle. Even motorized units supporting transport and convoys bringing up kits, ammunition, and supporting troops from the rear quickly disappeared into the shelter of the jungle forest at the very first warning drone of approaching bombers overhead. Meanwhile, sloshing their way through muddy swamps and tangled underbrush, attackers and defenders engaged in realistic battles. It was mostly guerrilla warfare of the American Indian kind, with a good deal of darting from tree to tree or hillock to hillock, and with streams of bullets flying from American Tommy guns instead of poisoned arrows. Next to the standardized British Ben gun, a cross between a heavy machine gun and a light rifle, the American-made Thompson submachine gun is the favorite weapon for British troops in Malaya. This is the same Tommy gun made famous by our gangsters. Small, compact, weighing less than a rifle, it is an ideal weapon for close-in guerrilla fighting, for it is a machine gun which may be fired from the hip with one hand, while the other hand is left free to throw hand grenades. Overhead planes roared entangled in sham dogfights, while others dive-bombed military objectives and exposed positions. Shore defenses joined in, with the big coast guns firing live shells at a mythical invading fleet far offshore. Enemy planes then swooped in to lay smoke screens around the gun emplacement, blinding them, while others dive-bombed these positions from overhead, until speedy American-made Brewster Buffalo pursuits appeared to engage and destroy the enemy aircraft. Singapore makes its little contribution to the half through Mississippi. When he was a little boy, his father was a prosperous German merchant in Paris. His mother was very tall, graceful, and rather quiet. She was a Viennese Jewess. Everybody who knew her in Paris knew that she was a Jewess. She told everyone so. This is Harrison Foreman in Singapore, returning you to the National Broadcasting Company in New York.
You have heard an on-the-spot report by Harrison Foreman, the National Broadcasting Company's representative in Singapore. Mr. Foreman's talk was heard in this country through RCA Communications, Incorporated. This is the National Broadcasting Company.